I'm going to be joined very soon by composer H.K. Gruber in New Zealand for the first performance in this country of his orchestral pandemonium Frankenstein, and also conducting the NZSO and Håkon Hardenberger in his trumpet concerto Ariel. But I thought actually we might start with this piece of music. Far too early to start on Christmas carols yet, but that was Stille Nacht, or Silent Night, by Franz Xaver Gruber, the Vienna Boys Choir there. And I'm joined now by H.K. Gruber. Now, what should I actually call you, Herr Gruber? Should it be Herr Gruber? H.K.?
Originally, H is for Heinz and K for Karl. And when I signed my contract with Spuse and Hawks, they thought, because of marketing reasons, it sounds better HK. But when I signed the contract, they asked me, and do you have a nickname? And I said to them, yeah, when I was a member of the Viennese Boys Choir, the boys called me Nali. And then they said, okay, then you are Nali for us. And since that time, this nickname is more used than my forename.
Is that right?
So, in fact, I'm called Nali. Bernstein, who signed at the same time like me the contract with Busy and Talk, said to them he would like to meet young composers. In these days, I was 33, who are able to use tonality.
Mm.
And so they gave him piano pieces of mine, and he listened to the world premiere of Frankenstein after 78. And he was very impressed and called me and said he wants to meet me after the dress rehearsal with the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra on the 5th of May, 79. And the rehearsal was finished. No member of the orchestra was on stage, only Lenny. And I was there, and he was waiting for me. And I introduced myself and said, hello, Mr. Bernstein, you wanted to meet me. My name is Gruber. He said, no, you are not. I said, H.K. Gruber. He said, no, you are not. Heinz Karl Gruber. No, you are not. Well, Nali, do you? Yeah, of course, Nali. So even Lenny only was calling me Nali.
That's wonderful. Yeah. You were a member of the Vienna Boys Choir,
yes.
and I believe that many, many, many years ago, you were actually in New Zealand at one point.
It was 1955, when I was 12. We had a very long tour. This was the longest tour a choir of the Viennese Boys Choir made. It took 9 months. We came over to Wellington with a ship called Rangitoto, with the New Zealand Shipping Company. Then we toured here in New Zealand. I remember very good Rotorua, in the Cargill, Dunedin, Auckland, of course. And then we flew to Australia and were there also another 6-7 months. And I remember that we had nearly an accident because we should have flown with an aeroplane who was a Wasserflugzeug, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And when we were in the air, after half an hour, one motor gave up.
Oh.
So we had to go back, and they announced, leave the aeroplane immediately.
Oh.
And so we left the aeroplane, and after a while, the aeroplane began to burn. So we had to wait and in the evening, And the most modern aeroplane which was available in these days, it was the Super Constellation.
Uh-huh.
6 hours from Wellington to Sydney in this time. I think now it's only 3 hours.
About that. Yeah.
So that was Wellington. And it's very interesting. From my room here, I can see the place where we have gone to the aeroplane.
Yeah. How extraordinary. I'm not surprised you haven't forgotten something like that, though. That would stick in the mind.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And I remember many buildings I see here. I remember, it looks like in my childhood. when I was the first time in Brisbane, that must have been in 1985 or something like that, I was looking for the town hall because the town hall in my child days, was the highest building.
Mm.
And it took me more than 1 hour to find the town hall because there were the skyscrapers.
That's right, yes. Everything builds up.
It was much more changed. I have the impression Wellington is not so changed.
You see the photos. I only arrived in Wellington in the mid-1990s, so it doesn't
Are
seem
you from
to,
Europe?
No. I actually from the South Island.
I see.
Not far off from Christchurch.
Ah, Christchurch.
It seems the same to me. But when you live in a place, of course, it's It's a bit like that.
Yeah, Napier, I remember also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, by the way, two or three of our choir members went back and live here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ah. Oh, what great connections. Yeah. Look, Nali, if I can call you that.
Please.
You mentioned earlier that you were a composer writing tonal music. This was when you started writing tonal music. This must have been at the time when that was quite a rebellious act. It was all dominated by the followers of the 12-tone method.
Although I come from the Viennese tradition, Schönberg, Berg, Webern, I rediscovered the possibilities of writing in the tonal idiom, like Eisler did, Hans Eisler, you know, the pupil of Schönberg. So its tonality is a very interesting machine. You only have to find out how it works. Yeah, and writing in the tonal idiom does not need a translation. Because everybody on this planet understands tonality.
I think that's something that Schönberg realized as well, because he kind of went back to
when he was in the
music
States.
At the end.
Yeah. Yeah. In the States, he finished his second chamber symphony, but he also composed in the States this very, very complicated piano concerto and the violin concerto for Louis Krasner. Mm. This is a 12-note music. Mm. I'm not against 12-note music. I just had the impression, middle of the 60s, that it is necessary for me as a human being to simplify my own language. And then I thought also the audience might need a more simple, somebody who speaks a simpler language, which doesn't mean that every piece of mine is simple. Yeah, Frankenstein, one could say, is... because in middle of the 60s, a friend of mine, Kurt Schwerzig, had the idea to found a new slogan, mob art and tone art. And so we wrote so-called mob pieces. You just played one of these. And in this case, we had to write on the basis of melody, rhythm and harmony. So this we rediscovered this kind of simplicity. But there was a big but. We wanted to simplify the language, but also we wanted to remain in a kind of complexity, which you also reach when you compose with the tonal idiom. So if Anton Webern would have looked over my shoulders and would have said, this is worth to make an analysis, then I thought it could be a success, although it's tonal. So tonality doesn't mean stupidity.
No, certainly doesn't. Look, we're going to talk very soon about your piece, Frankenstein, which really is, I think, the piece that most of us would associate with you. But let's hear just a fragment from it, first of all.
Frankenstein is dancing! Frankenstein is dancing! With the test tube lady! With the test tube lady! My little daughter dear! My daughter dear, it's you! My little daughter dear, little daughter, it's you.
That's an excerpt called Frankenstein from the larger work Frankenstein, including the two exclamation marks. My guest is H.K. Gruber, the composer and performer of that work. Look, as I said earlier, that really was the work which put you into the public imagination. That work really made a huge impact, didn't it?
Yeah, it was my very first international success. The premiere was on the 25th of November 1978. With Liverpool Philharmonic, and the conductor was a certain Simon Rattle, a very young conductor in these days. He was the assistant conductor of Walter Weller, who was a former concertmaster from the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, and Simon was assistant conductor there. And I met him a year before and just showed him the ink still wet score of Frankenstein. And he turned the pages and decided, I will do it. And his father was my English coach, by the way, because the premiere was in English.
Oh, it was in English.
Although the piece is based on a German original, H.C. Hartmann is a kind of Austrian James Joyce. And I used his so-called children rhymes because behind the lines you find what he said, hidden political statements. Mm. So the naivety in this piece is artificial. And there is a political message between, which it's up to the audience to find out the message.
Because he never liked to explain it.
No. If you explain a poem, you shoot it.
Yes.
Yeah. It is absolutely forbidden to explain a poem because a poem is a riddle, like music is a riddle. Mm. And so if this piece is played for a children audience, the kids are taking it one-to-one. And for an advanced, grown-up audience, they can have or should have some associations. And so, for instance, well, I tried to explain one little thing. There is a piece called Red Song. Mm-hmm. And in a second verse, it says, "Little, do you see good Robinson sneaking off to have some fun? He's had too much roasted goat. Watch him wading to his boat. The next island is his goal. Robinson in trepid soul. Listen how the oars are lapping. Listen to the wet sails flapping. As he sees the pale moon rise, there he meets a new surprise. Cannibals live on this shore. Any child can tell you more." So who are the cannibals? So it's probably the white race, which is going with a boat, discovering some islands. Who is there? Of course, cannibals. Yeah, and we have to civilize them. So this is probably the message between this very simple, innocent song. I shouldn't have explained it, but
shot it, I'm
for
sorry.
Me, for me, yeah, because the piece was very often done on stage. as ballet, for instance, Netherlands Dance Theater made 60 performances. Jerzy Kilian was the choreographer. And so when I speak with somebody who makes a stage piece of it, we of course discuss the various interpretations. So this is one of them. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So it's not harmless, although it sounds harmless. Yeah.
Fascinating. Look, you've given so many different performances of this work. I know there are composers who have one work which seems to be requested by people all of the time. Mm-hmm. That becomes their signature work, and they grow quite resentful of it. Have you ever grown resentful of Frankenstein?
No, I have. Well, it is an unusual success, this piece, since 41 years, and it made me traveling all over the world. I remember from 1979 on, when Lenny met me the first time in Vienna, he showed me his schedule and said, "Look, I cannot conduct your music, although I want to. You have to conduct yourself, and I make the promotion for you." And he recommended me from this day on in the States. Wherever I have been in, for instance, my debut in Tanglewood Festival 1980, was because he gave them the order to invite me. Mm. So I was there for 2 weeks and made teaching plus the American premiere of Frankenstein. And then followed San Francisco, Buffalo, Los Angeles, and so on and so on, and Paris. And wherever I asked who recommended me, in fact, it was Lenny. And when he gives an order, you have to do it, yeah? Otherwise, you have difficulties. And then, so it was like a snowball, and everybody wanted the piece because it's unusual, because the musicians in the orchestra are playing also toys, and this alienates the orchestra sound, and the music plays with elements of so-called light music, although it is a very complex structure. And it is, in fact, my most successful mob piece. Mm. Ariel, the other piece which we are doing here, is much elder. It was premiered in 1999 at the Proms, and is very complex. I even used 12-note rows and so on. It's quite another, I don't want to say style. It's my handwriting, but much more complicated. One couldn't compare it with Frankenstein, although one can hear it's the same handwriting. Yeah, and of course, this piece I wrote. It was a work in progress. I mean, Frankenstein. I was invited to make the incidental music, the background music, for an actor who wrote Hartmann poems. So it was written for 6 instruments. And the players also had to play on toys. Then I made an arrangement for our mob art and tone art ensemble. And in 1976, when I joined Boos & Hawkes, my director, New Music, David Drew, suggested, couldn't you make from this piece a piece for chansonnier and orchestra? So I recomposed it and had this material from this old mob piece and extended the thing. And after 1.5 years, it was Frankenstein with 2 explanation marks. And then, one year later, in 1979, I had an invitation to the Berlin Festival. And there were 2 pieces which I should premiere there. And just to make sure that at least one of my pieces would have some success, I rearranged the orchestra version of Frankenstein to a version for 12 instruments, and it was a success. And since this time, the ensemble version and the orchestra version, here we are doing the orchestra version, they are having a peaceful coexistence. And not no normal singers are doing it, so mostly actors. Mm-hmm. or crazy people. because I am a baritone, in fact, but I don't call myself baritone. I'm a chansonnier. Hmm. And I developed a kind of singing style, which means speak the text in the pitch which the composer has written, without vibrato and so on. And this is a completely other way of transporting text.
Mm. Well, that's fascinating, isn't it? Because H.K. Gruber, because it has elements of the Sprechgesang of Schoenberg, but also elements of the interwar cabaret style.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I was very impressed when I was 20, when I heard my very first time music by Kurt Weill. It was the opera Rise and Fall of Mahagoni, which I have conducted meanwhile several times. And when I discovered his music and the singers who sang Weill, I found out there is a special singer. His name is Ernst Busch. And he, I would say, is my singing teacher, although I never met him personally. But he was a tenor, and he sang in this style, which I have taken over from him, which means sing in the pitch which is indicated by the composer without vibrato and all these silly things. And this is a kind of, as you said, Sprechgesang, which means the talking, the sprechen is more important than the singing, in fact. Yeah. Mm. Although you have to sing in the right pitch because we have a music structure. Mm. But
it is actually notated in terms of...
It is notated. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. How do you actually... because I know you've done performances where you've conducted the music well as performed. How do you how do you manage that? Because surely... You'd need to turn your back to the audience and to the orchestra at some point.
After a while, I got invitations for whole orchestra concerts. So, for instance, I made once a piece by Michael Torkey, Ecstatic Orange, then Beethoven 5, Break, Frankenstein. Or in Baltimore, Danse Macabre by Saint-Saëns, Beethoven 8, Frankenstein. So normal symphony concerts. And so... I give an upbeat, one, little mouse takes me to his mousy house, and then I showed the orchestra the beat. Of course, when I do it without conductor, then I need at least one rehearsal more, just to make sure it is a big chamber music what they are doing.
Mm. How are you doing it in New Zealand?
In this case, the charming way of producing this evening is that I conduct the first half and Håkan Hardenberger is conducting the second half.
Aha.
So I begin conducting the so-called Children's Symphony, the Toy Symphony. Nobody knows who composed it. It was a pupil of Leopold Mozart, somebody.
Because we used to think it was Haydn, then we used to think it was Leopold Mozart.
No, it was not Haydn, and it was not. It was a pupil of Leopold Mozart. Ah. I should have brought the name. In my score is the name. It was written for a firm in Berchtesgaden in Germany, and they produced toy instruments. And just to show and sell these instruments, this pupil of Leopold Mozart wrote a so-called toy symphony in which all these toy instruments were combined with strings. Yeah, so that's what we are doing. And then I conduct the Circus Polka by Stravinsky and Ariel and Håkan is playing. Mm-hmm. And after the break, Håkan is conducting The Philosopher, a symphony by Haydn, and Frankenstein. I did it also with Håkan conducting in Malmö, but the ensemble version. He had a chamber music festival in Malmö. And I do it several times just when a conductor wants me as a chansonnier. So then I am there and make my job as a chansonnier. It is a little bit dangerous for conductors who are inviting me because I know the piece so good and all the details that it is complicated for me not to interrupt the conductor if somebody goes wrong. Because after 41 years. I know all details and know a little bit more because of the experience than any conductor. And
but you and Håkan are such good friends. He probably wouldn't
we
mind,
are like we are like brothers. You know, we know each other since the middle of 90s or the 80s. Because I was a member of the Radio Symphony Orchestra in Vienna. I played the double bass, and he was playing Zimmermann trumpet concerto. And in these days, my life was complicated because during the day I had to play in the orchestra, and in the night I composed until 3 o'clock in the night. Then not enough sleep. Then went back to the orchestra next day. And I was, because I knew he knows me, I did hide myself behind the bass. But he came to me and said, "Hello, do you want to write a trumpet concerto for me?" And I thought he just makes a joke. And I said, yeah, of course, yeah, just to get rid of him. And so a few weeks later, I got the letter from BBC. Commissioned for a concert. And since I knew this piece will be premiered in the Albert Hall at the Proms, my agent, Stephen Lumsden from Intermusica, said, in this case you have to use a large orchestra because Albert Hall is very big, you know, about 7,000 or 8,000 people. Like, and you have to make noise there. And so we have a large orchestra. And for Håkan, this was a real adventure, and since I didn't take care much about his abilities, so it is a very technical, he says to me, the most complicated piece he ever played. And
he's played some complicated pieces, let's face
it. Yeah, he plays a lot of, since in the classical area, there is nothing for trumpet besides Telemann and all this baroque music. But he wanted to play more advanced pieces. So he, since more than 30 years, or even 40 years, he is commissioning trumpet concertos from living composers, of course, because Beethoven never wrote a trumpet concerto, and Mozart also not, and so Bach, only his Bach trumpet passages. So there are very good trumpet concertos existing by, for instance, Brett Dean. He is an Australian composer, lives in London. We are good friends. So there are many, many, many good pieces existing. And my piece probably is one of the successful pieces he has in his repertoire. And
well,
I think
he's played it an awful number of times, more than 100 times, I think.
Yeah, I think in Wellington it might be by 98 or 99. Yeah.
And I think I've read somewhere that that he considers it to be probably the best trumpet concerto written in the last 50 years.
Hopefully he said it, but I wouldn't say that. But I enjoy the piece because large orchestra and such a fantastic soloist. And by the way, I wrote many concertos for Manny Ax, a piano concerto for Yo-Yo Ma, a cello concerto, two violin concertos. And now I'm writing a piece for Kari Kriku, Finnish clarinetist. Yeah. For him, Lindberg wrote the clarinet concerto. But when I write a concerto, it's not for a soloist and in the background is an orchestra playing mpa-pa-pa. I always try to make a complex piece in which the soloist is the top of a very complex material. Yeah. So it's a symphony for trumpet and orchestra, in fact.
Yes. Well, H.K. Gruber, thank you very, very much for coming in and talking to us this afternoon. We must finish now, but I do have some of your trumpet concerto Ariel to play. This is the second movement, and Håkan Hardenberger with the Gothenburg Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you.
That's the second movement of Ariel, the trumpet concerto by H.K. Gruber, my guest this afternoon on Upbeat on RNZ Concert. Håkan Hardenberger was the trumpeter, and Peter Ertfisch conducted the Gothenburg Symphony Orchestra. That work, as well as Gruber's Frankenstein, is being performed by the NZSO, in company with works by Stravinsky, the Toy Symphony, and also a Haydn Symphony. That's in Wellington on Thursday the 10th at the Michael Fowler Centre at 7:30, and in Auckland on Friday the 11th at 7:30 at the Auckland Town Hall. And my thanks once again to H.K. Gruber for coming in and talking to us about his work.